Welcome to Refirement Life, the podcast for anyone navigating life transitions or planning to make life transitions to ensure your next years are your best years. Listen in for insightful, generous, and sometimes humorous conversation. It's time to get fired up with Christine Zamuda and Muge Wood, your hosts for this latest episode of Refirement Life.
We have a special series today. We are spotlighting a few irreplaceable leaders, one of which is Barry Ridgway. We will be talking to Barry about empathy, culture, and global leadership. And I'm personally very excited to bring Barry here, who is one of my all-time favorite leaders in work and in life. We have gotten to know each other quite well over the years. Barry Ridgway today is the CEO of Sugarland Partnership. Muge is here with me as well, and she and I both had the great privilege of working with Barry at Microsoft, where he truly created a legacy of incredible impact on the business and the people fortunate enough to be working alongside of him. A little bit about Barry, for those of you who don't know him personally. Barry Ridgway brings 30 years of global leadership experience, including 27 years as an executive at Microsoft, where he led strategy, sales transformation, marketing, and team development across the Americas, Europe, and Asia. His client-focused career has taken him to over 50 countries, working with Fortune 500 organizations, governments, and startups alike. Rooted in a family of teachers and coaches, Barry's lifelong values of learning, teamwork, and helping others grow inspired him to create Sugarland Partnership. And his purpose with these organizations today is to continue to help leaders and teams achieve their highest potential by creating clarity, building authentic relationships, and connecting big picture vision to practical execution. We welcome you, Barry, to the show.
Great. It's great to be here. Thank you, Christine. That was a very kind introduction. And it's great to be here with both you and Muge again. So it feels like old home.
Awesome. Yeah. So we have so much to talk about today, especially in light of how AI is becoming such a predominant tool that folks are using. And we still need to, you know, really center on those things that make us irreplaceable as leaders. And just thinking about your career, you've worked on four continents and you've had the opportunity to interact with all kinds of teams. When you think about some of those experiences, what sort of comes to mind in terms of empathy and inclusion? Are there, maybe times where you, how to use different tools in those situations? Anything that, you might want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, sure. No, thanks. Thanks for the question. I think empathy is a human characteristic that's kind of grounded in our ability to feel the feelings of other people, right? And that is sort of universal, regardless of where you go in the world. But I would say what is probably different is that those qualities are filtered through the lens of the local culture and can be influenced by, there are some cultures that have a collective point of view. There are some cultures, like the United States, has a very individualistic point of view. And so thinking about things like empathy and inclusion, you have to, I think, understand what's influencing the space. So if you look at systems of belief, the history of a culture and country, governance structures, family structures, values that are unique or different within that context, that's going to influence, I think, how you access and be more empathetic as a leader. And so certainly my time overseas, obviously you want to understand how people feel as a manager. You want to create space and include them, but how you do that might be different. If you're coming with a very open mentality to that and you're bumping up against someone that came in a culture that's not as open, they may not know how to cross that bridge with you when you invite them. And so finding ways to do that that are sort of culturally relevant and comfortable it was certainly something that I learned. Some cultures, as an example, you have a very hierarchical system, and so you might have junior leaders that just don't speak up because they're not the most senior person in the room. And so if you really want to get information, you got to find a way to invite that without disrupting the value that's placed on hierarchy and the importance of that. And likewise, you might have a leader that, you know, if you're coming from a Western point of view and you're very open and want to have an open dialogue in an open room and let's just get everything on the table, let's talk about everything, people are very uncomfortable with that. And so being sensitive to how people might be interpreting what you're doing, and being patient to, you know, learn first the context at which people are coming into a space is really, really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I found that especially, well, exactly what you just described, working in Asia and when we would do like large groups.
Yeah.
The participation on an online community was really, really low. You had to go one-on-one and talk to people and really build those relationships before you get any significant feedback.
Yeah. And I think some, like, certain cultures, there's, I think sometimes in a corporate environment, you're trying to get to clarity a lot in meetings and conversations. And you're bringing your own bias in terms of perspective of what is truth. Mm-hmm. And that there can be shades of truth. So just being sensitive to how people are perceiving it and not being necessarily pursuit of what you're trying to get to truth, but to invite and challenge yourself to be open to new truths that may emerge. And I know that sounds like you should do that always, inviting different perspectives, but I do think sometimes, certainly coming out of the US and going working in Latin America, or working in Europe, working in Asia, certain cultures are more open to the style that I learned early in my career. And then so just having to adapt that and be sensitive to, you know, how people are perceiving what you're trying to get to, because you can sometimes get to the same answer without following the path that you thought you needed to follow. If you can give enough context and create enough space and let people fill in that, then they may surprise you and you may learn something different about yourself.
Mm-hmm. It is, yeah. It is interesting. It's I think there's cultural differences. Language is part of the culture, and then you throw that in there, expressing yourself in an environment where multiple languages coexist, and establishing a common understanding of the opportunity to challenge the rally around a particular goal is no easy task. At the end of the day, though, Barry, I think to your point, just establishing a deeper understanding of a particular culture as much as possible, why people behave the way they do, and establishing their personal relationships can definitely break down barriers. When I'm on global teams, I notice that a particular topic, it just gains so much momentum in a particular part of the world. And over in the US, we may think, like, why do they care about this so much? Not that it is not that important, but there are all these other things. Why is this one so important? And then, you know, there's always a reason why, and understanding that, and allowing space for it to unfold in the way that it needs to unfold is really important. And I think patience that comes with it is also something to think about, which sometimes we don't have enough of.
Yeah, I think I agree with you 100%. And I think just being curious, like, I mean, you need to be curious, like, because if you're coming in search of what you want, you've already lost, you know, people by that. So I think it's, I agree with that. And I think the trust factor is big. Finding ways to understand, to be curious, to connect first. Our culture is certainly Latin America. It's connect with people first, you do business second. It's you really have to be switched on to that and open and curious and seeking that out and being humble and going into all of those situations with a curiosity to genuinely learn where people are and meet them where they are, and then say, okay, well, we're trying to get to a specific outcome, you know, and invite them to help teach you, you know, what's getting in the way of that, what opportunities they see in terms of, you know, areas of opportunity to be able to get to what we want to get to. So, but that curiosity is super, super important.
Yeah. So you've given our listeners already a lot to think about from a leadership perspective, being curious, understand the context, challenge yourself a little bit to understanding the bigger picture. Muge, you mentioned patience, also, you know, providing that time and space to get more feedback to really understand what the full picture looks like. So Barry, if you're talking to managers of managers, you've had to lead very large organizations. How do you advise them to scale that? Like it's sometimes you can have success with one leader, but getting the whole organization to model that behavior
I think that's a good question. I mean, I think it's these are soft, you're kind of referring to soft skills here in the sense. Mm-hmm. And so how, you know, it's not a tangible, you know, data-driven thing that you can point a finger to, but I think, you know, at its core, it's really about, you know, building capacity to learn, reflect, and grow as a individual, at an individual level, as a team level, and as an organization. And so if you're thinking about how you do that as an individual, you're probably working on your own personal development, on not only hard capabilities, facts, things I need to know about, product knowledge, technical depth, market, segment specific, customer specific information that is things that you can go learn, but the soft skills, right? And where are you getting those and what are the feedback loops that you get, where you're getting that information? And so that's either through mentorship and coaching at an individual level. But then most of the teams that I worked on, we always really wanted to have a trajectory of growth in the team. And part of that is the team dynamics, and it's the capabilities to facilitate dialogues that get the best out of our people. So part of that is creating the right culture. And what is culture? Culture is really a reflection of the behaviors and the values of how people show up. And so I think, it is one of those things where being intentional about your own personal development, you know, am I growing? You know, self-awareness is an attribute, a leadership attribute. Very difficult to identify triggers in a room or recognize, you know, power dynamics or identity dynamics if you don't know yourself, right? And so being aware of how you are entering a room and the role that you have in that room, if you're a leader specifically, the perceptions that creates in the room, the way people respond to what comes out of your mouth or the questions that you ask or how you behave is really important, and getting dialed into that so that you're really sensitive to yourself in the moment. And then I think having a real strong curiosity around being vulnerable. And that means a genuine, like authentic effort to really want to open space that and many ways to do that is being vulnerable yourself as a leader, but to open space where it's okay to put down your guard, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so that curiosity of wanting to do that for yourself, but also wanting that for others, so that they feel good. Because if you're vulnerable, typically you get a lot of support. Most people, if you're vulnerable, every time I've ever done it, it's rare. I mean, there's so much fear about being judged or being perceived as a weakness or those types of things. I find that probably 99.9% of the time when you do it, people get inspired by it and they get motivated by it. And it's almost an invitation to allow them to also let down their guard a bit and have a real conversation. And so I think getting leaders to be able to know when they're doing that themselves and know when there's an opportunity to invite that from others in a way that makes them more comfortable to share really what's going on with them. And then I think being sensitive, team dynamics is important. A lot in business gets driven by metrics and management, but like being a curator of the dynamics in the team, are what's happening in, whether it's a specific challenge in the business, specific opportunities, just overall business meetings, being able to notice that, who's speaking, who's not speaking, being really good and talented at curating that. And by curating it, I mean being responsible for that as a leader, looking around your team in a meeting or looking around a call when you have people on the phone, what's not being said, being aware of that, being aware of what we're missing, asking those kinds of questions to find new opportunities to create more willingness for people to participate, that want to participate. Obviously, people have to want to do that, but typically if they feel comfortable, people will do that. And so I think being really good at that. So in terms of scaling that, I mean, I do think it's a journey of personal development and making sure that you're developing as leaders. You have criteria as a leadership in terms of the behaviors, the qualities that you want. I think in terms of team development, there's a journey on that, getting to, from a forming team to a high performing team. There's lots of different methods to go about that, but a lot of it starts with trust, self-awareness, knowing the roles in the team. How well does the team know each other and their capabilities? How open are they to bringing those best capabilities? Are they okay at challenging each other to be better? Those types of qualities. And I think those bear out in, really a good indicator is how the team's capacity to weather the ups and downs of a business. If you see a team that's super performing and then something goes wrong and then they just stop performing and they can't get through that, it's sometimes an indication of the depth of their capacity to be agile and adapt. And that requires an openness, it requires a willingness to, be vulnerable in those moments, to learn, to, lean into the opportunity that they can grow from those situations.
Mm-hmm. It's just amazing, Barry, what you said, especially all of it, but also around navigating through change as a leader and building the capacity to adapt and navigate at times of change.
Yeah.
Because it's just going to happen invariably. You can document all kinds of strategy. Change will happen. It could be internal, external. And I see that change, more accelerated in the world of business and geopolitics and all of that. I think maybe the old paradigm is we look to our leaders for answers and we like certainty. I want to know where I stand, what I'm supposed to do, rules, black and white. And all of that is rapidly evolving. You throw AI in the mix, it's an accelerator towards all of this. So, how do you think leaders can show up better to navigate through this and build capacity for their teams to change? Because you're absolutely right. I've seen teams fall apart completely unmotivated because they don't have the answers, and it really affects their psyche deeply. And that capacity to navigate change, it is just so important because as the old adage goes, the only constant is change.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. Yeah, I think it's a great point, McGay. I mean, change is inevitable, and being able to navigate it is everything. I think it probably has been, conditions have been more static in the past, but also, you know, some would argue in certain spots that there's been tremendous amounts of change. But I think today the pace specifically, you know, when we're talking about technology and innovation, it's just moving so fast. Stuff's changing daily and sometimes even hourly. The dynamics of how businesses are having to shift to those conditions, these disruptive forces, you know, AI is a huge opportunity, but it's also massively disruptive. Like, what does it mean for the workforce? What does it mean for the different kinds of tasks and functions? What does it mean? And there's a lot of unknowns, right? But a lot of people trying to bring great ideas and solve for that. So that's just, you know, we're in a hyper change oriented environment, and being able to navigate that and recognize that, you know, there's plenty of models out there for the steps of change, but one of the bigger ones is obviously the emotional connection to what's going on, and being able to truly let go of something that you thought was solid that is no longer there, whether it's a strategy, whether it's a role, whether it's a capability, and adapt to something different requires really a tremendous amount of personal trust and belief. It also requires obviously the right conditions. People will tell you great communication, great context, participation. No one wants change applied to them. You need to really engage with people to go through that. But the reason you need to engage with them, because it's a mental process. You need to know, like, do I really understand how this change is impacting me and what it's going to require of me to be something new? And so to be something new is not, you know, humans will always probably at some level gravitate to being comfortable, right? And to being stable and constant, and that creates safety, it creates a sense of security, it creates knowing, it creates stability. There's a bunch of things, confidence, lots of things go into that. And so to say things are unstable and you have to be something different, people just need to really grasp what that means, and they need support to understand that, the context for that. And then they have to start making those personal decisions. And so I do think leaders have to create the vision. They have to facilitate the change. They have to engage. All change projects are only successful when they're fully engaging the system that's being changed. If they're applied, and many corporate reorgs and structures are being applied, and managers are being asked to go out the door and apply those without the organization having much say in that. And some of that is just because it's going to happen that way, right? You have to, business is too complex and they're too big to involve everybody, but a manager really has to think about that and know that their people are holding on to a way of being, what it means to them, and that you're asking them to be something different, but you've got to help them understand what that is, internalize it, and then support them to start moving in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Barry, I've had the benefit of watching you like bring a big team of people to a new place and helping them with some of that change. I also witnessed one really impactful moment as one of your directs in watching you bring people together around a difficult external situation. And if you remember the murder of George Floyd, we had a very, it had a somewhat diverse team. We had diversity on our team. And I think that the way that you brought everyone together and created space was pretty phenomenal and very impactful. I was just curious about that moment in time. When you reflect back on that, did you prep a lot about the things that you were going to say and how you would say them? Because your words were so well chosen. I just remembered that, you know, everyone was really open about how they felt. We heard from our Black team members, our Spanish team members, our white team members, and there was just a lot of sharing in a pretty, a very sensitive moment for our country and for our workforce.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are lots of those topics. I mean, the George Floyd issue is one that sort of captured, I think, the the national mindset. And, you know, I think I think for me, it was just like not talking about it felt like it was just weird, like, because and that's where I think leaders need to be okay with saying, look, here's our work and our world and stuff's going on. And what that could be what's going on in Kosovo. It could be any conflict. It seems like we've got a whole buffet of those topics lately.
Correct.
that are external, that are happening around the world, that we can respond and react to, and which ones do you pick and choose? But that one was a big one. And for me, it just, I was feeling it, and I felt a certain way because of what was going on. And I thought, well, if I'm feeling this, I wonder how everybody else is feeling about it. I think having, you know, again, empathy is about connecting with how people are feeling. And what we're talking about today a lot is in a team, the thing that's not necessarily easy to manage with metrics and data and outcomes is where is the team emotionally on? Where are they? What's their emotional state? And any big thing that comes along like that, I think it's great to have a conversation about it because it impacts us all. And I felt complicit by being silent. I felt uncomfortable because, you know, I'm a white male and, you know, and I thought it was important to talk about what you say in prep. I didn't prep a lot. Mm-hmm. I thought it's probably better to not say a lot in this thing, but to really do a couple of things, acknowledge the moment and acknowledge how I was feeling and share that. Mm-hmm. But not try to solve it, not try to make it comfortable for other people, not try to explain it, but to just invite, like, how are you guys feeling about this? Mm-hmm. And get people talking about it to share their perspectives and points of view, because I think that would help everybody as a group to heal through the pain of what we were witnessing, you know, nationally. And you know, ground rules were people could share whatever they wanted to share, and anybody that wanted to talk could talk. And there wasn't really a wrong way to engage on that. And I didn't really overthink it. It was more of, you know, this was something that was emotionally triggering for me. I figured it needed to be talked about because it was probably emotionally triggering for everybody. And we just needed to have a conversation about it. And so, you know, I think it was really about holding space and not trying to steer it with any outcome other than, you know, share why it was important for me and how I felt about it, but also just invite others to dialogue about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it goes back to what you were saying earlier. It's, you know, being okay to be a little bit vulnerable. And in this case, I think having some courage too. And courage, be vulnerable takes courage, but seeing that and then also creating space, not having an agenda other than let's have a conversation about what's impacting us.
Yeah, you see, you know, I think it needs to come from a place of your own feeling. So I do think it's important if you're a leader to like share authentically what's going on for you. If it's seen as, you know, there's a lot of corporations saying the right things, doing the right things, whether it's environmental or whether it's political or whatever. And sometimes it's, do you believe it? Do you not really believe it? It really kind of comes down to the leader and how they're articulating why that's important for them. Mm-hmm. And so it's less about, we need to talk about this because we should be talking about it. It's no, that doesn't matter. Like right. what matters is like, this is bothering me. Is it bothering you? That's it. Like, and just have an honest conversation about that in a very authentic space, I think is the way to do it. Not try to over engineer it, not try to react to it. You know, LinkedIn is guilty of lots of, and I'm guilty too. There's a compelling need to say something. We have mm-hmm. to say something. We post something. There is a lot of in some ways, some expectation. Like if something's going on, well, we need to make a statement about it. Like, mm-hmm. and so do we need to make a statement? I think it's less about trying to make a statement for making a statement. It's really sharing what's going on genuinely for you on that topic. And it's more of, you know, trying to, you're feeling something, your team's feeling something, you know, that's going to impact how everybody's showing up. So that's worthy of understanding, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think it is just so key to have leaders who feel comfortable doing that, bringing out topics perhaps that may be awkward, uncomfortable. I've seen instances where we hope it goes away. We may rationalize, maybe it's not pertinent to the core business. You know, let's put it aside. But the fact of the matter is it is there. It's affecting us and it needs to be talked about authentically. And that goes a really long way. So, Barry, I am curious also about changing the flavor a bit. In the era of AI, we see a lot of opportunity. I think we have undisputed facts on how it can transform healthcare, research, education. We are also seeing quite a bit of concern and anxiety on what it does to the history of humanity, the creation of jobs, what advice do we give our kids and youth on what they should study, what it means for their prosperity. So in an era like this, that is sort of continuously evolving, what do you think it implies for the work of leadership?
You got to be engaged with it. Mm-hmm. It's not going away. So this is just another wave of innovation that's coming along, and it's coming quickly, and it's coming with consequences that probably many of us have not considered, nor can we even, I mean, a lot of us didn't think of those things that it's going to do, but starting to get a personal experience with it, as long as it's something out there that's going to take my job and it's going to consume everything that we all know about humanity and reality as we know it is going to shift and we're not going to have control anymore. That's not an engaged view. I think getting engaged with the technology as a tool, which is the beautiful side of what it's going to be able to provide, and having personal experience with it and engaging with it as an individual, as a team, as a business, and starting to use the capabilities and unlock the potential that it can have. And I do think there's a lot of perceptions around, again, it's a change, right? So what are we holding on to, right? If AI can do something, but we're holding on to it because we think we shouldn't let go, well, why don't we let go? But even if we don't know what's next, we're going to create space for something different. And it doesn't necessarily mean that our value is diminished, but I totally get it. I mean, I understand all the arguments and limited understanding of many of the arguments of and the fears around it, but I would say the first thing is just be engaged with it. You can't be on the sideline worried about it and talking about it if you're not using it and sort of internalizing what it means for you and your team and your business and for customers and starting to think about that. So yeah, I mean, I think it's a big change that's coming and we need to get ready for it. I think that starts with being familiar. I think the other thing then is starting to think through, you know, what is AI great at and what is it not going to be great at and where can leaders create value? I do think short term, there will be, you know, an opportunity for leaders that know how to use AI and harness the potential of AI. And those will be leaders that differentiate themselves over leaders that don't. So if you resist and don't get to know it and harness it, you're putting yourself at risk because there are going to be leaders that do understand how to use it, leverage it, and take decisions on it, and get the great outcomes that it can provide in the different areas like you talked about in life sciences and all kinds of things. So I do think that I think you want to be one of those leaders in this world. Where does that lead us down the road in terms of, you know, how fast AI evolves to continue to take over operational functions of business. I mean, a lot of that is, you know, still yet to be determined. A lot of people forecasting, you know, the absolute view of that, which is it's going to replace all jobs and humans are going to be relegated to staying at home and trying to find purpose in their lives. You know, so there's a lot of sort of doom and gloom on that. And I would just say the way to ride the wave is be on the wave, right? And be on the surfboard and doing your best to understand it and react to it and see what opportunities come and new opportunities you may not realize will emerge from that because you're engaged, you're actively working to embrace it, and you're looking for ways to create greater value with it, with both people and using these AI modules as tools to enable better outcomes.
Yeah, and I think the people who can really think creatively and frame a problem and, you know, build muscle that would help them think diagonally, not laterally, because a lot of the AI tools today, even the best ones, it's very, you know, from A to B, this is the steps. But they might not know what this great experience over here is if we connect these two disparate ideas and reframe. Yeah.
Context. I mean, the context will get learned over time. But mm-hmm. It can't learn everything. And, you know, the one thing AI won't do is feel. And what we are uniquely different as human beings is we are sensing beings. We have our senses, right? Our eyes, our ears, our mouth, our, you know. Will AI know what chocolate tastes like? No, it won't. It will not know that experience. It will not know what the lived experience of being what we experience as conscious carbon-based beings, right? And so there's value in that because, and we just talked about empathy and emotions and the blockers of getting people to change and how much emotional work is required to maneuver those things. AI may be able to anticipate people being stuck or resisting, but it's not going to know what that feels like.
Well, I mean, if it cannot taste chocolate, it's no good to me because that's a very important part of my life. So I think the other aspect also is, you know, it does a great job of summarizing things as a derivative of what is being put out there. It can even create unique combinations and it does a lot of fantastic things. But truly original thought that is transformative, that helps us advance in leaps, I think that is still human ingenuity that can really be put in practice through the emotional connection and community that we create and derive. It's almost like it can give you the best recipe, but then what you do with it is actually where the magic happens.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I do challenge that it will be able to make connections eventually, probably better than we will on information and data, right? Mm-hmm. But what it won't have is emotional intelligence and it may simulate that, but it's the ability to know what that feels like, the empathy, which is the ability to connect with people. I do also think there's something around vision, like will AI create a vision for the world, or are humans driven to create something better? And we have an imagination, so will AI have an imagination? Will it be able to imagine like its own things, right? It might be able to simulate that. I don't know, but I do think being able to think about the bigger picture is typically navigated by a whole cocktail of how we feel about stuff. People follow visions typically because they're emotionally connected to them. So back to the feeling part, you know, you've got to feel, you know, does it represent my values? Is there a moral compass around the direction that we're going? All the things that go into humans supporting or not supporting something, I think, are going to be things AI will struggle with. I do think storytelling, too, is a way we connect. So this whole idea that we pass stories down for generations, I think it's our ability to do that. Will AI be able to tell us those stories in a contextual way that inspire and simplify and get the get the feeling context, because what comes through those stories is people connect with them through emotion, right? So our ability to connect with AI emotionally may happen, and it may again be able to simulate that, but I do think those are things. And I think the culture, like I do think we know when something's off from what we believe and value, and we know when it's not. And I think it's that discernment, like that will take a long time for AI to be able to emulate or simulate. So, and to be able to curate a culture, what defines a culture is typically not data and facts. It's how people experience it. Right. Because you feel a culture and you experience a culture. You don't. Yeah. So it's whether it's wine and music, or whether it's chocolate, or whether it's values that you believe deeply in that inspire you, you know, those elements are going to be things that we hold on to. And I'm an optimist. I actually genuinely believe, like, the things that humans are really good at are going to be given the opportunity to not, we don't have to use our prefrontal cortex so much to analyze, control, and manage information and data. We can let go of some things that we don't, that we're spending an awful lot of brain power just to be on top of and be in control of. If you don't spend the time on that and you spend it on things that are more innately characteristic to being human, we might end up with a better world, right? Because we're spending less time on knowing and having data and being right and controlling, and more time on connection and creativity and inspiration and, you know, feeling and the experience of living, which could be, I don't know, could be fantastic.
I like that version of the world.
Me too. I'm signing up.
Well, I generally think, like, the people that are exhausted from all the things that AI could do for them, like, put the pen down.
Right. Right.
Let it do it. It's always going to do it better than you, but that is not, like, maybe we weren't born to, you know, necessarily try to do all of that. And we've created models that can now accelerate processing faster than us. And we always, obviously there's, you know, we're not relinquishing full control to everything. We still have many years to go in terms of quality, and quality assurance in an AI world is a scary thought, because I think people are trying to understand who mediates that, and will humans be able to control the quality of what gets generated? I do think embracing it, get on the surfboard, be on the wave, learn as you go, and see how it adapts you. I don't write anything without using AI anymore. It's fantastic. It's a fantastic productivity tool at just a first rung on the ladder. It's fantastic at that. So I think that frees us up to use different parts of our brain for other things.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think if you think of the three legs of a stool, right? Thinking, sensing, and feeling. I mean, AI has the thinking with what's already there, but the other two, you know, can you sense something bad's coming? Can you sense what's happening in the room? And using your intuition and everything, some of all your experiences to be a better leader, be a better person, you know, that still is not something that AI can jump in and do.
I don't think so. I think it'll be able to try to simulate some of that. It'll probably learn that, but to some level. But to do it well, it has to be really curious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It has to want to do that.
Yeah, and I would imagine a whole nother level of detection, right? I mean, facial recognition, reading people's emotions, biometric. I mean, there's a lot of things that you pick up on in a room that a screen-to-screen, even screen-to-screen like we are now, like is a bit different than being in person. It's a lot different than being in person.
Yeah, I mean, the brain is filtering, I don't know, there's some podcast I listen to talks about millions and millions of pieces of data, like per second. Right. Your brain is built as a massive filter, right? Mm-hmm. That is sensing. And so there's some ingenuity there that I think will be hard to recreate, to your point.
Yeah. Wow. Well, we covered a lot of ground. For sure. This was such a treat to have you here, Barry, with your wisdom and your sharing some of the tips for leaders, and actually just for all of us to think about as we move in through this new world. Any parting thoughts that you'd like to share with the audience before we wind down?
No, I mean, I think we kind of mentioned some of them. I mean, on the AI topic, I'm an optimist. I understand the pessimist point of view on it. I do. And the danger, you know, rushing into anything quickly can get out of control. So I don't disagree that there should be guardrails. So please don't misinterpret that. But I do see enormous opportunity, and I don't think it's going to slow down. I don't think the world's going to pause on AI because there's so much competitive advantage. The commercial sector is going to leverage this tool faster than anybody, as well as governments. And so I think that train is far left the station. We're not going to get some big great governance framework, but what we can do is, you know, it's be really thoughtful about discerning how we engage with it, and when it isn't aligned with values, that we need to be doing, you know, what we can from the influence that we have, whether we're in a commercial running a commercial company or a government or wherever, to ensure as much safeguard as possible over the integrity of things that are happening if it misaligns with our values. So we kind of have to police it as users, and the hope would be that over time AI learns what is a bad set of behaviors and what is a good set of behaviors. But you know, we have both right now in our world and everything in between, and so to think that they're not going to be propagating both of those in both directions is naive. So I think that will happen, but I would say get familiar with it. Just be close to it. Don't stick your head in the sand on it, and embrace it. Figure out what it means for your life. Try different tools. Just all kinds of free training out there, and incredible training from every higher ed institutions offering stuff. Every company's offering. Microsoft, Google, Amazon. Everybody's offering stuff. So there's plenty of ways to educate yourself and get familiar with it. And I think I would encourage people to be AI literate and make that a priority.
Yeah, agree. All right. So Barry, we will put your website in our show notes, because I think for those who heard you today and have not yet experienced the opportunity to work that closely with you, you're a tremendous asset as a business advisor, as an executive coach. Would love more people to have access to your info. And we thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity, and look forward to seeing how all this comes together and how you use the info, and hopefully it was useful for you and your audience.
Absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely.
Thanks so much. Until next time, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Our hope is to spark a little joy, inspire, and educate our listeners in ways to live an even more meaningful life. If you have reactions to share from what you've heard, please visit our website, refirement.life, to leave a voice message. You may even be featured in a future episode. To keep in touch, subscribe to our podcast, Refirement Life, using the podcast player of your choice. Always remember, you are never too old to set a new goal or to dream a new dream. Thanks again for joining us on this episode. Until next time.